With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Lore boys here, reporting for Salutes Duty. My name is, of course, Peter O'Donohue, and I would not like to live forever. But joining me are a couple of apes that might want to live forever. So tell me, you apes, do you want to live forever?
Private First Class Ethan Palmer reporting that I do indeed want to live forever.
Okay. No fears death.
Yes, no. Tremendously.
James Miller, I've signed up for the kamikaze operative, so you know my
Loves
answer.
Loves death. Yearns for it, really.
Yeah. So we've got, I don't fear death, willing to die. Ethan fears death, does not want to die. Jamie, literally trying to die.
Yeah.
I don't know if I've
mentioned this, but I think I'd be great for an officer.
Because you're afraid of death.
Is the officer corps recruiting? Well, for a lot of reasons, but being an officer would help my fear of death, that's for sure.
Yeah, I'm a World of Warcraft officer. You don't want it, dude.
Oh,
yeah. People just going to complain all the time.
All the seems drama, right?
Lieutenant, that's my loot drop. I wanted to loot those bodies.
all of these like middle-aged men who I'll act like six-year-olds that I need to take care of now. What happened to me?
Very close to the truth.
Anyway, this week, I may have mentioned this on air, but I've been promising this one for a while and held true. This is going to be a suggestion from one of our listeners in the Netherlands.
Shout out to the Netherlands. One of my favorite.
We read his email on air a couple episodes ago. His name was also Peter, and I really like the cut of his jib. And he clicked here to know more.
We'll call him Peter the Puritan.
Yeah, Peter the Starship Trooper.
Ethan, where were you? Ethan, where were you in the Netherlands when you went?
I've been to Amsterdam. Only. Amsterdam. I'd love to go back, though. I just love the people, honestly. Everybody I met was so nice and so friendly. Amsterdam is a beautiful city, too. And I don't smoke pot. I have in the past, but I don't do it with any kind of regularity. And I didn't when I was there. So it wasn't like we're going to go to the Netherlands and do drugs kind of trip. It's just a really beautiful city. The canals are beautiful. The people are beautiful. There's 800 bikes on every single street corner. It's unreal. I've never seen so many bikes in my life. But a beautiful city.
Nice. I still haven't been to Europe. I intend to go, again, when it's legal. So I hope everybody's having a good social distancing and or quarantine, depending on your country. We're getting there. Don't worry about it. But thank you for listening. Thank you to all our new patrons. Doesn't seem like the time, but thank you anyway. Anyway. Peter over in the Netherlands, which he said was semi-locked down at the time, suggested Starship Troopers, either the book or the film series. I knew the book was like old-timey sci-fi, and I knew some certain things about the author that are a little bit interesting. So what we're going to be covering is the author, Heinlein, and also the novel, Starship Troopers, originally published in 1959. As well as some history about that. So this book
is... like at least 15 years ago.
It's just like so nostalgic for the 80s and stuff. So we're doing Starship Troopers.
Yeah. I think that was the year my mom was born. Like, that's a long time ago.
59? Oh, yeah. It's older than both my parents. My parents were 63 and 65.
You got young parents, Pete.
Yeah. I know. Fuck ups is what you're trying to say, right?
They didn't wear a condom.
I'm almost 30. So, the reason I'm not covering the film is because it's... Well, we'll get into it, but it's more of like a parody film. It's a satirical film that just talks about how war is bad.
Yeah.
I think war is bad. I think you two would agree personally. If I know you two well enough, not big fans of war. Ethan?
Depends on what context.
Okay. All right. That's not a hard no.
The war against the sun? I'm all for it.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Gotta go.
Because you're trying to kill blonde.
Yeah. He's coming to our planet, uninvited, trying to kill our people and grow our vegetables? I don't think so.
I don't fucking I don't think so, man.
I can grow my own vegetables, thank you very
much.
I'm
doing the Jordan Peterson carnivore diet that gives me violent diarrhea. I don't want the sun growing no plants.
Yeah. I haven't started one, so don't knock until you try it, I guess.
That's fair.
Yeah. I've never started one nor participated in one. No, really.
It could be great.
Might be great.
Yeah. I kissed a boy. I didn't like that very much, but to each their own. Some people like
the mink?
No, you kissed me. That's different.
Oh, sorry.
That was on my birthday.
I thought it was mutual. My bad.
Archduke Franz Ferdinand got shot, and then Peter's like, I got to kiss a boy.
Yeah.
Basically. Yeah. Yeah.
It's a domino effect, really. Like,
yeah. So for the film Starship Troopers, have either of you seen it? The first one?
Yes. I've seen the first one.
Okay. There's seven, apparently.
Seven? Are you kidding?
One of them's a cartoon.
I knew two. I thought maybe three. I never would have guessed seven.
Yeah, it's
fucking wild.
I know it's between 5 and 10. I was looking at it yesterday, obviously, just when I was putting everything together and listening to the audiobook. Have any of you guys read the book from 1959?
No.
Does it use the N-word? Because a lot of those old words.
Actually.
Okay. Good.
Yeah.
Thank God.
It does not.
I thought that's where you're going with it.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, it's not Lovecraft.
This just in. Jamie hates Harper Lee's To Kill a Mockingbird because it uses the N-word.
Exactly. And the themes therein, especially defending people from crimes they didn't commit. So I've seen the first film multiple times. Like I was just saying, I listened to a big chunk of the audiobook. I listened to about 2.5 of the 8 hours at time of recording. But I didn't want to spoil it for myself when I was writing and spoil it for anybody who maybe hasn't read the book in the past 60 years, for some reason.
But, and it's still planning. Although I have Dune on my shelf that I'm planning to read and I haven't read yet. So.
Oh, Francis Herbert. Yeah, we've had multiple requests to cover Dune, and maybe we will at some point.
That's one of those ones I refuse to be on the episode until I actually read the book. So
I refuse to cover that until I can properly pronounce Kwisatz Haderach. Anyway, there may be some light spoilers here from a book from 1959, if, Mom, you're listening and still have fucking Starship Troopers on your shelf. So we're going to start with the film here, because most of this episode is going to be about the book and also a little bit about the author. So I'm going to give a few details about the film just because I find it, frankly, after doing all this, so much less interesting, just kind of the way that it came out or was put together and then came out. So Starship Troopers, the film, was directed by Paul Verhoeven, who's also from the Netherlands. So I don't know if old Petey was just National Treasure Paul Verhoeven Starship Troopers on the list.
Yeah.
I don't know how people regard him.
Yeah,
they all know each other there, right?
What?
They all know each other there. That's how it goes,
yeah, or
right?
Maybe like I don't remember his last name. Maybe his dad is Paul Verhoeven. It was just like
maybe
have
this
these
is
boys
Paul Verhoeven.
Talk about me.
maybe this is Paul Verhoeven just messaging us, be like, please talk about my movie again.
Yeah. Not many people have seen Starship Troopers since the 90s.
Oh, sure, we can look into that. What did you say your name again was? Peter.
Wait, what's your name? Peter?
Yeah. Not take one of the names off the show.
Yeah. Just like looking at your email signature, it's Peter.
What were you gonna say there, Jamie?
No, I just elaborate on what you got.
I love Peter's technique for taking a drink of his beer. Just be like, Jamie, you were about to say something, and then he takes a big pause to take a sip of his beer.
Please God, vamp. I need my fix.
Mommy needs her juice.
So, the first film came out in 1997. Originally, the film was just, so there's like kind of like hobo scripts that just like travel around Hollywood and sometimes eventually get made. The film Argo features one of those scripts. The movie Argo was just like a cheap script that somebody just decided to give to the CIA so they could make a fake movie to get people out of Iran.
Sure. I didn't know about Argo. I thought that was like about the baseball team in Toronto or something.
I thought it was about the guy with the golden fleece.
That's Jason and the Argonauts.
That's my confusion.
The baseball team in Toronto was the Blue Jays.
He's thinking of the football team, the Canadian
Football
League. The
Toronto Argonauts
play
football, as far as I know.
The Toronto Argonauts.
That's
the
one.
CFL, Canadian football.
Jamie doesn't know Sprouts. Come on.
Yes. Good sports joke, James. Thanks, James.
And back to you, James, with the winner.
Back to you with Sprouts. Originally, the film script was called Bug Hunt on Outpost 9, or At Outpost 9, excuse me, which was a completely unrelated script that was just kind of like a hobo drifting around Hollywood. Like,
although the name of the script does sound kind of like the movie, so...
Yeah, you'll see why. So Bug Hunt at Outpost 9, which is drifting around Hollywood, and some similarities between Starship Troopers and Bug Hunt had been pointed out to Verhoeven, so he decided to read the book and try and adapt it. The book apparently made him, quote, bored and depressed, so he simply had Ed Neumeier describe it to him and then retroactively turned Bug Hunt into Starship Troopers.
I love it.
Verhoeven and Neumeier had already worked together in the past, most notably on RoboCop, which is it's a fantastic fucking movie.
I knew Paul Verhoeven from somewhere.
Yeah, he directed RoboCop. And RoboCop is a satirical film. It satirizes the militarization of the police and consumerism, which is why it's set in Detroit and all that. If you haven't seen RoboCop, go watch it.
I mean, I'll throw a hat in the ring for Starship Troopers too. I think the movie
is both.
CG really does not hold up. Not like RoboCop does better, except like when they melt the guy or whatever. I guess like there's moments where it's kind of like
dude, it looks great. The problem is the Ed 209, the fucking mech, is clearly stop motion.
Yeah,
and they had to figure out a way to have it not fight RoboCop, so it falls down a flight of stairs, and then he just walks away.
but it was the 80s, and like that was also a much earlier movie. Starship Troopers did really lean into the like it looks like StarCraft Brood War when you see the Zerg like running around in a cutscene, and it's like that is very 1997 or 1996 CG.
Yeah, it came out in 97. For the record, it came out 4 years after Jurassic Park and holds up way worse than Jurassic Park.
Well, it used CG. Jurassic Park was all animatronics and practical effects, right?
Yeah, that's true. Jurassic Park, I think, has like 2.5 minutes of CG total or something like that. But
I think maybe the remastered version. Because Spielberg was super against CG for a long time. Like, he was outspoken against like computer animation, which is, I mean, get with the times. Okay, boomer, right?
Yeah. Like, okay, one of the most talented directors who's ever lived.
For Jurassic Park, I think the reason why it looks so good is it had really great casting with the dinosaurs themselves. They got the right Triceratops for the role, you know? So
yeah,
I don't know. I thought he phoned it in a little when he was like lying on his side, breathing really heavy. I was like, come on, dude.
All of the dinosaurs, except for the fast ones in Jurassic Park, are female. So I want to say, very progressive casting on Spielberg's part to have a mostly female cast in 1993.
Yeah, right.
Think about that. Yeah. That T-Rex is still getting work. She was cast recently opposite Octavia Spencer in some period piece, I'm sure.
Uh-huh. Well, I think King Kong's to thank for that because he was just a horror on the set. And, you know, so they tried to go with the female cast afterwards.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love in the room.
Yeah, I love how after King Kong was released in the 1930s, they never hired a male actor again. It was all females from then on out.
Yeah,
I was going to say Godzilla.
Shakespeare did Men in Drag after King Kong was just a diva on set. It's all the women. Every actor's a woman with a fake mustache. So yeah, anyway, that's about the movie. It was an unrelated script. Verhoeven tried to read the book. It made him sad and he hated it. So he just had somebody else try and retroactively adapt the film. The film adaptation, due to the fact the person who directed the film didn't read the book, it's basically in name only. Characters have been entirely rewritten or combined. One character named Dizzy is gender swapped into a hot lady so that the film can put in a love triangle. And while the character, spoilers for the movie, Dizzy still dies, she dies towards the end of the film, opposed to Dizzy in the book, spoilers for the book, dies early on. So Dizzy, yeah. Not long for this world. Sometimes she's hot, though.
So sometimes less long for this world. Because sometimes at the beginning of the book instead of at the end of the movie.
The main character, Johnny Rico's motivation was completely changed in the film as well. He joins the army because his girlfriend Carmen wants to be a pilot. Mm-hmm. A woman named Carmen wants to be a pilot in the novel, but she's actually a minor character. Johnny in the novel finds women fascinating, but shows no desire for them sexually.
Okay, that's a very weird stance.
I feel the same way about butterflies, I guess.
Yeah, true. Or yeah. Geckos. Rainbows, waterfalls.
Yeah.
Which I mean, which I don't go chasing because I don't want to fuck them.
Heavens, no. Yeah.
No.
Never to be like waterfalls.
This is less of a Johnny is not a sexual entity. It's more of the fact that in the book, he spends so much time being moved between different spaceships and different platoons. There ain't no time for romance sort of thing.
Okay.
Because the
waterfall
novel
would always go down on you though, right? So that's kind of cool.
That's not cool. Yeah. Oral sex, Jamie? That's the devil, okay? That's okay. The devil right there.
Unless you had some Skittles in there. Then.
Keep your clothes on. Keep the lights out. That's what I always say.
Just through a sheet. I only fuck my waterfall through a hole in a sheet.
That's how waterboarding was invented.
Put the sheet over my head. Just like oh, man, I should tell somebody about this.
You lay the sheet on her, but then you don't realize that she's upside down underneath it. You know, it's a big mess.
So another note about the film, there's only one alien race, and it is the arachnids or the bugs, who in the film have had their abilities severely nerfed. In the novel, every single one of the arachnids has like a acid or plasma ability, opposed to in the movie where they have like certain artillery bugs. Sort of thing.
Yeah.
What do you
mean?
And
then most of them like run up and pinch things with claws or hit things with big like scythe arms.
Yeah. Most of the arachnids in the movie are big running knives, basically, yeah. Or like pliers that just like cut people in half. They have a couple of like flamethrower bugs. They have artillery bugs, and they do still have the brain bug, which we will mention later, which is the commander sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They have guns. Oh, sorry, I was just picturing straight up bugs, but these bugs have actual weapons. Okay.
No, they don't. They're like Zerg. They just have like.
They're like Zerg. The Zerg from Star Trek.
They can spit acid or fire or plasma. They're an alien race of imperialistic bugs, so they've evolved guns, basically. In the novel, that is.
Bio guns, if you will.
Yeah.
Not, without just taking. Just like these ones. I'm flexing. I'm flexing with everyone.
Guns, gun show, baby.
Without taking things too far off the rails, I saw this thing on Reddit today of it's an old-fashioned mouse trap, and you have to pack a gunpowder into it and a little like bullet, and then it's like the trigger is basically all the way down, and you put the food under the trigger, so the mouse has to squeeze under the trigger and push it up, which makes it shoot a cannonball into the mouse's face.
Hell yeah. Got him.
I saw something like that once. I saw something like that once, which was like, the most ridiculous patents, one of which was similar to that but worse, in which it was a mouse trap that was mostly just a spring-loaded rack that you actually had to mount and like lock in your own revolver. So it was just a thing you could attach a six shooter to that would shoot a mouse in the face.
I love the idea.
A handgun.
I love the idea of like an antsy American and like somebody breaks into their house in the middle of the night. They're like, where the hell's the mouse traps? It's like running around, like scrambling, grabs
guns everywhere.
A piece of cheese at the end of it. Like,
dude, even more than that, too. Okay, I found this out. There's a guy on YouTube and he has Mousetrap Mondays where he goes over mouse traps. But like, imagine you're sleeping and you hear bang, gunshot comes off.
Horrible.
Lights come out at like 3 a.m. Like,
that's horrible.
No way.
I guess it was like in the barn or something, but frankly, you could just get a fucking barn cat and get it a gun. Right?
It's like strapped.
Well, at least it's responsible. It's not like a machine with a switch on it.
That, and we're tangenting further, much to Jamie's chagrin, but that reminds me of that classic image of an octopus holding 8 handguns pointing at a cat, and the cat just saying, "You're one short, buddy."
It's a Gloctopus.
Yeah. Oh my god.
Credit to whoever drew that comic first.
Yeah, brilliant. The final note about the film and the differences, obviously, with the movie is that even the central government of Earth has been completely renamed. So, like, they changed the characters, they changed the plot, they changed the setting, basically. They changed the name of the government. If you just had any other movie and put Starship Troopers on the cover, you'd basically be as close.
Pride and Prejudice, it would work as well.
Yeah, Eat, Pray, Bugs with Julia Roberts just being sad in space or some shit. I don't know what the fuck that movie's about. So, me neither. One of the reasons
Got a mouse. Yeah.
Mouse trap in the background.
Somebody outside.
That was my humane mouse trap. It's just a trebuchet that just launches them 300 meters into a field.
Although my barn's got a roof, so I don't know if they're making it out.
Yeah.
launches them 300 meters.
If I ever own a house bordering a field, I'll try and set that up. Because that's a humane way. Like, I don't think a mouse would be negatively impacted by a 300 meter trebuchet ride.
I think they're probably confused. Light enough where they wouldn't get hurt when they hit the ground.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Maybe they'd never see their family again, but I don't even know if they'd realize, you know?
Yeah, are they smart enough to miss their families?
I don't know.
Huh. Like, question for another day, I suppose. So, one of the reasons I wanted to dive into the novel and not into the film, despite the fact that production of the film is quite strange, is some of the themes of the novel have been been described by some people as overly militaristic or fascistic.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. I've never read the book, but that's always what I've heard.
Exactly. Like, I had heard that as well, and I was just like, ooh, controversy, you say.
Fascistic, like fascism, or what?
Yeah,
exactly. Okay. So we'll get into the author next, which, frankly, I had to cut huge parts of this, because the author is one of the most fascinating people I have ever accidentally started researching.
I feel like every American author in the 1950s was just the most, like, interesting character who just, like, did copious amounts of drugs and, like, did you ever see the shootout of what's his face, the journalist in his backyard with the fucking guy across the field? And they're just shooting guns at each other.
Yeah,
he's like, this is what it's like to be an American. Like,
yeah, it's fucking wild. Yeah. So to make a proper satirical film, Verhoeven took the basically trivia that he knew about Starship Troopers just as far as he could. So while I said the production was kind of over, we just got a couple of overlapping things here to fade into the next part. Also, I apologize if you find this episode too long. There was a lot.
You're doing the DJ, like, switch the record right now.
The author
talk is the fader slide as it's going
exactly.
The record on the right.
That's what ultimately I've wanted to do, is I've built a catalog of at least 170 hours of podcast garbage so that I can eventually be a mediocre SoundCloud rapper. Like, I have not figured out a better way to get herpes.
I'm fairly certain one doesn't exist.
I'm at a loss, frankly. So SoundCloud rapper it is. Michael Ironside, who is one of the actors in the film, sweet name. Oh. And he was also
you were going to say that was the author of the book. I was like,
No.
That's a very fascist name.
Michael Ironside is also the original and best voice for Sam Fisher in Splinter Cell.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. He asked Verhoeven why he was making a right-wing movie, to which Verhoeven replied, quote, "If I tell the world that a right-wing, fascist way of doing things doesn't work, no one will listen to me. So I'm going to make the perfect fascist world. Everyone is beautiful, everything is shiny, everything has big guns and fancy ships, and it's only good for killing fucking bugs." Casper Van Dien was cast as the lead, who, if you've ever seen him, is one of the most Aryan looking men around. His jawline looks like someone sculpted a handsome man out of a attractive cinder block. Like, he is perfectly blonde, perfect hair, blue eyes. He's in phenomenal shape in in
Starship Troopers.
Starship Troopers. Yeah. What the fuck am I talking about? Yeah. And with a name I got distracted like imagining what he looked like.
Yeah. With a name like Casper, he's probably so white his skin is translucent, right?
Right.
Yeah, basically, yeah. He's one of those like anatomy things where you can see through the skin. That's got the clear plastic shell.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can take his liver out and pop it back in. Yeah.
Oh yeah. That was Hitler's dream. He's just like, ah, oh, I want Lego Man, damn it.
The perfect Ubermensch. I can take out his liver at will.
Transparent. That's what he wants. Sadly, this didn't work because at the time reviewers saw the movie and people who review films and even before like hate clicks and clickbait were the only thing left in the industry. Film reviewers were still smooth-brained idiots, and they were just like, wow, Verhoeven made a fascist movie, and we don't like it.
Yeah.
So,
and again, coming from RoboCop, which is, like, almost satire of the same, like, concept, like, over-militarization, gun control, like, all these
it's
things.
It's fascist cops instead of fascist military. It's the same thing, exactly.
It's so crazy that people missed it so much. But, I mean, I think audiences at the time really, like, it didn't do well at the box office, which I guess a lot of that credit goes to the critics at the time, right? Because...
Yeah.
You can't exactly go on, like, message boards, like,
what kind of internet was there in 1997?
None. Yeah. Really.
There was people completely missed the point. He made a big dumb goofy cartoon about people killing bugs and people were just like, wow, this goofy movie about silly fascists is far too fascist and I don't like it.
Yeah.
So that was the problem. So let that be a lesson to you kids. Nuance is not dead because frankly it never stood a fucking chance. It's been it's just been 23 years and still nobody gets it. One of the things about the movie that bothered a lot of people is the opening propaganda film for the army is a borderline shot-for-shot remake of Triumph of the Will, which is a 1935 pro-Nazi film made by Leni Riefenstahl, who was a film director in Germany at the time. And a fun fact about her, she lived to be 101 years old.
She only like died the Dalmatians.
Yeah.
Just like the Dalmatians. One year for every Dalmatian.
She only died in 2003.
That's too bad.
Yeah. Now, we haven't really had the issue thus far, but just as a quick note, despite the fact we're going to be discussing fascism like as a concept and presumably mocking it, God willing, it's a comedy podcast, I will ask that we don't immediately default to calling everything Nazis. Because the Nazis are fascists, but not all fascists are Nazis, sort of thing.
Fair?
Yeah. Like the square and the rectangle thing.
You're drawing a weird line in the sand for me, but okay.
Yeah, like, okay. Yeah. Why, though?
Because the book is, I wouldn't say positive, but interesting at the very least. And if we just default to the same joke over and over and over again, come on.
Pete says he's better than that.
I am better than the Nazis. Quote Peter O'Donohue.
Not so sure.
So, Starship Troopers was written by Robert Heinlein and published in 1959. Heinlein was born in Missouri in 1907. So, growing up in the Deep South in the early 20th century, he took a firm anti-racism and anti-segregation stance politically.
I mean, I'll say, like, Robert Heinlein, and I've never read Starship Troopers again. By all accounts, he's one of, like, the greats of sci-fi, like, up there with Asimov. And
he is one of the big three as from American sci-fi, yes.
Exactly. So, like, all credit to him, for sure. I haven't read this book in particular, and I know very little about it, other than the critiques that I guess Peter heard that made him want to do this episode. So,
yeah.
I mean, I'm interested, but his other work, by all accounts, was pretty good.
There's a bunch of songs named after it, like Stranger in a Strange Land, Mars is a Cruel Mistress, I think is another one. Like a bunch of like albums and songs have been written about a lot of his work.
Mm-hmm. Shake That Ass by Eminem was written about Starship Troopers.
That Kesha song with a bottle of Jack. Yeah.
Yeah.
TikTok.
Brush my teeth with a bottle of Jack. Yeah. That was titular character, Mr. Starship Trooper. In the book, brushing his teeth in the morning.
It's actually the second chapter. The first chapter's in medias res, but the second chapter, he brushes his teeth with a bottle of Jack. Kesha, big fan of Heinlein. So much of his work was considered to be far ahead of its time, since, quote, green was more common than brown when it came to 50s sci-fi, and his works often featured either female protagonists or protagonists of color. Johnny Rico, the protagonist of Starship Troopers in the novel, is Filipino.
Good for him.
His full name is Juan Rico, and he's also bilingual, and he speaks Tagalog, which is one of the Filipino languages.
Yeah.
Cool.
I don't know if I pronounced that properly, but I'm sorry if I didn't.
It's close enough. I work with a lot of people from Philippines, and that Tagalog. Sounded right.
Yeah.
That sounded right to me, but I'm not an expert.
Why don't you go ahead and mimic how one of them would say it, James?
Probably similarly to one of us. It'd probably sound like Tagalog.
Probably not, because we pronounce it very poorly, I would assume.
Yeah. Now, just to kind of reiterate how much not reading the book kind of let Verhoeven miss the fucking point of this book, is they recast Johnny Rico as, like, the most Aryan man on Earth. And this wasn't, like, shitty casting where they changed the race of the person. Like, he was just like, no, I'm just going to do this for the joke to make it even more fascist.
Well, so you can be fascist without being racist, I want to assume. Like, it's probably really difficult and tricky.
We will get to that.
Only the best actually. Only the best fascists can thread that needle.
Yeah, exactly. It's a tight line to walk, man, fascism. Like,
we will actually get to that, because the book itself is distinctly fairly progressive in some ways, which is super weird. But like, also, like, I will go up front here. I find this author interesting, and I find the politics of the book fucking fascinating, but I have no doubt in my mind that it is a fascistic government. It could be argued that it's a dystopia or a utopia, actually, which is another interesting aside here, but, you know.
I mean, like, a lot of smart people, or you know, seemed like smart people, because they had, like, huge contributions to the fields of sciences or medicine or something like that, or whatever literature, that, like, may have also believed in eugenics back in the day, and you're like, oh, well, that's a fucking shitty thing that they were really wrong about. But so, you know, I think for Verhoeven making a movie, like, it's such a visual medium, like, having the like race swapping the character to, like, the stereotypical white Aryan man just kind of makes sense to, like, send a message more than saying, like, oh, it's a Puerto Rican man, and then trying to explain on top of that why it's fascist.
Well, Johnny Rico's Filipino.
In the book.
Yes.
Yeah. In the movie?
In the film, he's white, but lives in Buenos Aires.
That's what I'm saying. So for Paul Verhoeven, like, it's easy for him. Like, it's an easy swap to make, because it sends, like, symbolism in, like, an easier, in a way that you could do in a book by writing it down.
Yeah.
That you can't necessarily do in a movie, right?
Yeah. Yeah, again, like, I don't take a firm stance on this author at all. I just find it, the whole thing was very interesting to go through. So politically, early on in the 30s, he was a Democrat, and he worked on the campaign of Upton Sinclair in 1934, who ran for the governorship of California.
Okay.
Great name. Don't know anything about him.
Sounds like Red Dead Redemption character, to be honest.
Yeah, exactly.
Upton Sinclair, just one last job.
Following what it was apparently a massive failure of a political campaign, Heinlein became anti-communist. His first novel, For Us, the Living, advocated for a social credit system, which currently is used in modern-day China by the CCP, who are, like, nominally communist, but I think that's kind of, like,
nominally, like, only, right?
Yeah, exactly.
We're not about to say China's communist, right?
Yeah, I would. No, exactly. Which is, it's, you know, surface level ironic, which is why I tossed that in there. Basically. But yes, in his first novel, he advocated for a social credit system, which is basically be a good citizen and be treated better than other citizens by the government.
Yeah. All you have to do is let the government watch everybody at all times and judge people.
Never say anything bad. Also, in some cases, don't hang out with anybody who says anything bad, because you could just be political collateral damage, which is like the weirdest fucking thing.
Yeah,
I feel like it's one of those things that like in theory could be a good thing, but in practice just never ever can.
It will never ever work. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And I do have a few things in here that I want to bring up because again, the politics of Starship Troopers just fascinated me, and a lot of it seems obvious, but is also fucking crazy. So. Don't you worry, we got plenty to get through. So after the end of the war in 1945, this being World War II, in case you missed history class for that, you know, month where you studied it.
World War II, now, was there a first World War, or?
No, it was actually the final version, so we shortened it, but it was World War 2.0.
It was World War I in beta, and then when they released, it was World War II, I gotcha.
It was World War 0.1 in early access.
Yeah, you had to hang out in Twitch long enough to get your beta key to drop, then you can go kill your friends and yourself.
And then kill yourself eventually.
That's what they all did in World War II, right? They killed their friends and they killed themselves.
Every single one of them, yeah. So after 1945, we see him become much more conservative and in some ways, like I mentioned earlier, a lot more fascist.
Mm-hmm.
He believed in a strong, unified world government, and he believed this because he thought it was the only way to prevent nuclear annihilation. In 1949, his novel Space Cadet featured not just the cell phone, 35 years before Motorola invented it, but also a unified world government that enforced world peace.
So if I was afraid of every nation trying to blow each other up... like having one large government might be attractive. Like, okay, like there's only we're gonna blow something else up, right? Like not us. Yeah. So.
I mean, again, it's one of those things. Like, sounds great, never works. No. Like, not in a million billion years does that work? Like,
no. But that's the thing. That's why the government, even in his novel written in 1949, they had to enforce world peace because, realistically, I guess he knew that someone would get hurt on purpose or hurt. By accident, and that's not very world peace of you. So you have to enforce the status quo because people are dicks.
So how do you enforce world peace to people who have nukes? Bigger nukes?
Bigger nukes. That would be
apparently one unified world government. It was the way he thought it was gonna do.
Could consider it a bigger nuke.
Yeah. In the end, he kind of like. Shifted around a lot. In the end, before he died and after he had some health issues, he identified as just being a libertarian due to his eventual love of personal freedom. Funnily enough, both the hippie movement in the 60s and the libertarian movement both have found inspiration in his work because he loves personal freedom.
So yeah, so libertarians are a weird group because they attract a lot of bad, like really bad sorts. As well, like I think the libertarian like is the perfect movement to sum up Jamie's sounds like a good idea in principle, but it'll never work, you know, because you need like a centralized government to just handle shit like taxes and schools and hospitals and stuff like that, like but libertarianism and hippieism, I guess, seem like
neither
they
of which
square,
works
yeah they square enough for me, like whatever.
I know a lot of people who, like, who I used to work with who are very liberal, but frankly just kind of want the government to stay out of their shit. And, like, that's a very simple understanding of libertarianism.
Yeah.
Other than the fact that you basically have to believe you can run an entire country on, like, a barter system, sort of. Because
I mean,
you don't
yeah.
want taxes, but you want like an entirely open market. Which...
Exactly. So it's like no central. Like, do you want a centralized currency or not? Because if you want a centralized currency to have paper money to pay for things, then you probably need somebody at a government like office to run that, right?
Exactly.
Now, who's going to pay that person? Like, does everyone just chip in a few bucks to make sure that person gets paid? Like, okay, well, who oversees that? Like,
I just watched Waco, Texas, and it seemed like a lot of the people who want. Like the libertarianism stuff are just people with guns who don't want police in their town. Like,
that's kind of
sometimes it goes that way.
That's kind of what I was getting at too. Cause like libertarianism also attracts like a huge amount of pedophiles because they're like, love is love. I should be able to fuck children. The government should stay out of my shit. And so now it's like, if you're a libertarian, how do you say like, okay, well, we need a police force to stop people from fucking children? Because like, I believe that most libertarians do not want people to be pedophiles.
I would assume pedophiles are probably still a minority. Yeah,
but it's like, how do you enforce it if you're a libertarian? Then like, do we have a police force now for that?
It's up to the children to defend themselves. They need bigger guns.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Give them a gun and a piece of cheese, and they could lure all the fucking pedophiles that they want.
Yeah. Although, if they want to be humane, they could put
a trebuchet that can launch.
Yeah, a trebuchet. 300 meters away from their home. Pedophiles 300 feet away.
They land comfortably in a sweaty movie theater or wherever they go.
Jesus. Anyway, just regarding Heinlein, he was super complex. He was briefly polyamorous, which is the Latin word for people who pretend like their commitment issues are a sexuality.
Was every fucking... Okay, I'm sorry, I keep derailing this, but was like every fucking sci-fi author of the fucking 1950s like this, dude? Like Jack Parsons, who's like one of the guys working on the Manhattan Project, like huge polyamorous, developed a cult to Satan and all this shit. L. Ron Hubbard, who invented Scientology, hugely polyamorous, also maybe a pedophile.
Didn't he also have like basically his own nation state on his yacht briefly or something fucking
he
weird?
He had
out
a yacht
the ocean?
Where he... He had a yacht in the middle of the ocean where he only employed 13-year-old boys. Like,
oh, yeah. Jesus.
It seems like a really, it seems maybe, like quite the boys club. That
everybody needs jobs, guys. Yeah.
Yeah.
What was that?
Everyone needs jobs.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah. Yeah. And he was also a nudist, which is Latin for people who are nudists.
Mm-hmm.
This is all very surface level, but look into Robert Heinlein, because obviously it is fucking crazy. This guy managed to take care of basically everything that in most lifetimes would take three people at least to cover.
Right?
Because you would need the liberal, the conservative, and the hippie, and even then, you'd probably only be at like a 70% Heinlein level of abject crazy degeneracy.
Yeah.
So, his work popularized or coined many terms. He popularized no such thing as a free lunch when he was a libertarian.
Okay.
Saying. But most relevant to us here at the Lore Boys.
Put that on a piece of corn.
I was going to say it.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, exactly. Space Marine.
Robert Heinlein said there's two rules. Don't mess with Texas. Check in on Texas.
Check in on Texas. For anybody looking for free merch on the website or wants to pay for it on Patreon, that is almost done.
And that concludes our ad break.
Yeah, and goodbye. Lore Boys. Sponsored by Lore Boys. The Starship Troopers specifically popularized the term Space Marine.
Oh.
In 1959, cool. Which, while the term Space Marine is actually never used in the novel Starship Troopers, it was shorthand for the soldiers within the novel, and actually originated somewhere prior to this, but nobody knows where the actual etymology started. It basically starts at people started referring to the Starship Troopers as Space Marines, because it's easier to say, and then it just went on from there, and that's where we get it.
Okay, wait, so the two words, Space Marine, are never used in the book.
Correct. Well, I mean, individually, yes, but not together.
But not together, like, okay.
Not to refer to a guy fighting in space.
So
an
people,
army man in space.
So is somebody referring to the characters in the book called them Space Marines at some point that we're not sure when that started?
Correct.
Okay.
And
I
it
got
just
you,
went
I
from there.
And then Games Workshop picked it up.
Yeah, exactly. And then Blizzard picked it up. Who knows from where? Independently.
No, they're just Marines. They're regular Marines in space.
Yeah. You know? So yeah. The book, Starship Troopers, takes place roughly 700 years after it was published. So that would be in the 2650s, where okay. Earth is managed by the Unified Terran Federation. So he has another fictional world government, just like in Space Cadet, because he was like, honestly, I think this was probably my best idea thus far. I'm going to use this again. In the film, like I mentioned, they changed the name. In the movie, it is the United Citizen Federation.
I feel like UTF, United Terran Federation. We've like said UTF before in the past.
Well, in Battletech, we have the Terran hegemony during the Dark Age. Terrans are the people in StarCraft.
What's the Halo one?
The UNSC.
UNSC.
UNSC, okay.
Yeah, they still call it IRF in Halo. Yeah. Yeah.
So
Will Smith is still alive. We still call it IRF.
I love that he's like, oh, we're going to have like a world government or whatever, and we're going to have like people of all races, and everyone's going to be happy in it or whatever. But we're going to use the Greek root for the word for Earth, yeah. You know? We're going to make it good and white still. Like, it's not the Chinese original word for root, which the Chinese civilization probably goes back further than the Greek civilization by a couple thousand years.
Easily.
But like, we're not going to use that one. No, we'll go with Greek, because that sounds right.
It was an American author in the 50s doing his best. Let's give him a little bit of credit here. With one of his many wives, I guess, or some shit.
Well, I think he's a Nazi, Peter, okay?
God damn it. I know you told me not to say that word again, because it was lazy. Shit. But yes, in the film, it is a United Citizen Federation, further distancing anything in the movie from the book Starship Troopers.
From the book, yeah.
The Federation sees its origins in the 20th century, where Earth's governments collapsed under the weight of unlimited democracies.
Wait, what?
Yeah, the all-you-can-vote buffet.
People just vote on everything? Like,
too many democracies, I think? So I didn't get to this point in the book yet, because the first few chapters are mostly military shit, not a whole lot of history. Yeah. And it's an 8.5-hour audiobook. It's just, I didn't want to spoil anything, but unlimited democracies was basically like too many people voting on too many different things. Like how every country has their own individual concerns and they all get to vote, meaning eventually people just could no longer work together.
Mm. Try to have a wedding, and then everybody in the wedding has to decide your food and the flowers are.
Yeah. The French like croissant and the British like, I don't know, Wonder Bread or some crap. Like, nobody can agree on what to do for brunch, and all of a sudden, all of a sudden, the world just falls to pieces. He also blames the history of the Federation blames banning of capital punishment as a factor as well, and this specifically was blamed on social workers and child psychologists. Sounds like a grudge, honestly.
Hey, I'm amazed that the hippies took so much from his work after talking so much smack.
Apparently, due to not fearing death, criminals just went wild. Because as we know in real life, the fear of the death penalty is what
is the only thing that stops me from killing. I know that.
Same, especially in Canada. I'm afraid of being killed in prison, so I don't commit.
Yeah, crimes. I don't want to get run over by a moose to death.
Which I think is how we do it.
In Canada, you could kill someone and you could get out and still have enough life left to live, pretty much. The sentences are not nearly as long here as they are elsewhere.
I don't know anything about Canadian prison.
I don't either. But like, you say like long enough, like 10 years is a long fucking time, man.
We've been inside for like 8 weeks at this point, and I'm going fucking crazy.
Peter, it has not been 8 weeks.
Like, shut up.
It's been like 5.5, man. Like,
I started working from March 17th. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Do you think I still get to use my BattleNet in prison?
Yeah, Jamie.
I can use my chores for my monthly subs or what?
Oh, for sure, for sure.
Well, they pay you 2 cents an hour for raking leaves on like a football field or some shit, and then you can
Yeah, 15 a month, that's all I need. Easy.
So Pete, it's May 4th. On May 17th, in 13 days, it'll be 8 weeks. So it's been 6 weeks.
Right. Well,
since
you
and I started quarantining a week after, so I'm at 5. Like, I agree.
Imagine going to jail for 10 years.
Right. Like, it's a long essay. It's whatever. If you live for 80 years, it's an eighth of your life spent in prison. Like, that's fucking insane.
What percent is that, crazy. Jamie?
We don't need to put somebody in prison for 25 years because you're not the same person after 10. Like, you're not the same person after 5 spent in prison, right?
Yeah. It's somewhere between 5% and 10%. I don't know.
It's not. It's 12.
How many pesos is that?
It's 12.5. It's not even.
Yeah.
So this no death penalty and all that crime led to turmoil in the UK, Russia, and the collapse of the North American Republic, which was the unification of the US, Canada, and Mexico.
Okay.
Excuse me. These three powers would unite and eventually become locked in a war with the Chinese hegemony starting in the distant, far-off year of 1987.
Ooh, I don't even remember that.
Do you remember when Russia, the UK, and the Americas went to war with China in 1987, 4 years before any of us were born?
I vaguely remember being there. Maybe that's the war that I started. Maybe I did start a war.
Between China and the Chinese hegemony, because they didn't have the government that they have today.
Yeah, the government structure that they have today.
Yeah, exactly.
I might be ignorant, but what does that word mean, hegemony?
Don't know. Didn't look it up.
Okay.
Yeah, didn't look it up when we did Battletech for the Terran hegemony. Don't know what it means.
Sounds cool.
I think it's some kind of like inheritance, isn't it?
Don't know. Jamie, pull up the clip.
I'm pulling
it up. Is it like dynasty? Is it like
leadership or dominance, especially by one country or social group over others? It just means like a government.
Okay.
Political, economic, or military predominance or control of one state over others. Oh, so it's like China saying, like, we own Nepal, and we own Taiwan, and we own Hong Kong.
You totally could have just said it like it was...
Oh, you mean like exactly like what today is?
It's still the hegemony.
Yeah. You could have said it like it's something noisy. Like, what's that hegemony over there? It's giving me conniptions.
Yeah, yeah.
I would have believed you.
By gumption.
So this war lasted a long fucking time. Towards the end of this global conflict, likely in the 2100s, a group of intellectuals instigated the Revolt of the Scientists. And this was an attempted coup d'etat, but was a humiliating failure. So fuck those nerds.
I mean, honestly, the coup of the scientists just sounds so destined to fail. Like, I could not picture something more feeble sounding.
Yeah.
This will be the coup of the scientists.
Excelsior! And like, it was single-handedly the entire coup d'etat defeated by one slightly stronger guy who was just like, fuck you, nerd.
Yeah,
slapped
his
clipboard out of his hands. He's like, oh no!
Who would win? Entire army of virgin scientist coup? Or one alpha Chad Marine, right?
Well, if you ask Heinlein, it's the one alpha Chad Marine.
Yeah.
Finally, in 2130, the Russo-Anglo-Americans signed the Treaty of New Delhi with the hegemony, the Chinese hegemony, and this was described as an embarrassment since the West had to release any and all prisoners of war, while the Chinese got to keep 65,000 civilians from Japan, Russia, and the Philippines, as well as two British paratrooper divisions.
Why do you even want to keep prisoners of war?
It's more mouths to feed, right?
Yeah. I mean, you can make iPhones real fast.
Oh my god.
I couldn't find anything about British divisions. However, a U.S. paratrooper division is typically between 17,000 and 21,000 soldiers.
That's a lot more than I would have thought a division was.
Yeah, same. And that's the 82nd specifically in the States.
Because
so,
you really kind of buried the lead because you're like, oh, you know, like 65,000 civilians. It's like, oh, wait, was it so that 40,000 people on top of the 60,000?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I missed it.
Yeah, it's both. So they've got the 65,000 civilians from Japan, Russia, and the Philippines. And then they've got the two British divisions, which...
Another 40,000, maybe?
Be up to and including 42,000 people.
A British person should get in touch with us and let us know if we fucked that up.
Yeah.
And it might.
Please phonetically write in your accent so that we can read it out.
Yeah.
Loreboyspodcast@gmail.com.
How else will we know where you're from?
Escape was the only option for these people. The war was not officially lost, but described by the Federation in retrospect as negotiated peace on extremely unfavorable terms.
Very UN.
Yeah, exactly. That's the political speak. How that ended.
It was like last week, some advisor from the UN or some representative in the UN was like, yeah, maybe we haven't done enough with China in the last 20 years. It's like, you think? Buddy? You haven't been hard enough on China in the last 20 years? Well, maybe.
Was it the death camps that we have satellite images of that
gave I mean,
oops.
Oops.
Yeah. Sorry, we've all been inside for a while.
Yeah.
So in Aberdeen, Scotland, a group of veterans of the war. That is how they would say it, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
A group of veterans decided the most reasonable thing to do when you, like, politely lose a war is to form a vigilante group to to break up riots and stop looting. Sorry?
This is that enforcing world peace, right?
This is where we start enforcing world peace. Apparently, the world government is a grassroots operation. If Heinlein is to be blamed.
Well, I mean, they're not fascist yet, right? Like, they're still democratic. Like, they're overly democratic still.
At present, this is the first whiffs of the Terran Federation. So they wouldn't technically be fascist yet. I don't think they have enough people because they're more of a gang than they are a government. I don't know. I don't know when you translate. Like, if I don't know if the Bloods and the Crips qualify as fascist. I don't know what their rules are.
They're not grassroots. They're astroturfing, right? They're like
at this time, yes. So they started to form their vigilante group. They're going to beat up some hoodlums is basically their plan. They hanged a few people because they're into retro shit apparently in the 2100s.
You got to earn.
They use the space noose, Peter.
Oh yes,
it's very high tech.
Exactly. Well, you need to find a plug very high up. To hang a guy.
Imagine though, in space you're weightless. It is just like our guillotine.
Our guillotine doesn't work either.
A guillotine, the gallows doesn't work in space. Man, what does work in space?
How are we supposed to kill anyone in space? Exactly. Yeah. It's like the Americans spent $100 million inventing a way to execute people in space, and the Russians just used a knife.
I have this great idea for a trebuchet that just launches you into the sun.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a piece of cheese in the middle. As soon as you go for it, throws you into the sun.
Most trebuchet. Of your sentence would be served on the way there. It would take you, you'd die of old age before you crashed into the sun.
You have to have the trebuchet actually on a planet, though, because you can't start from space, because the whole way the trebuchet shoots is because the gravity pulls it down, right?
It's just a trebuchet just whipping around a person, like... it tries to launch
I think
them.
A ballista attached to a space station would probably work.
Yeah.
Right.
Like if you had the string behind, like a crossbow with a
crossbow's
belligerent in it, you could probably launch them into the sun.
Crossbows work in space. They're not as efficient, just like a bow and arrow is not as efficient. But yeah. Peter, I don't know how to tell you this. A ballista is not a trebuchet.
No, I know. That's, I'm changing the siege weapon because the trebuchet clearly would not work.
Guys, you know battle archery where you go and you shoot your friends? Imagine you could go up in a spaceship and then shoot each other with crossbows. That'd be so
zero
fun,
G's,
man.
Dude?
Yeah, dude, that'd be so fun.
I mean, I'd be fine just going up in a spaceship even without the battle archery, if I'm being honest.
No.
I don't know if that's exhilarating enough for me.
It's only worth it. It's kind of boring though, isn't it? What do you do? How many times can you look at the sunrise? I mean, not every 90 minutes.
I don't need to go up any higher, frankly. I get the gist of it.
30,000 feet is enough for me, thank you very much.
Exactly. I've fallen asleep on an airplane. It's probably the same thing.
Yeah.
Anyway, they hanged a few people, including some veterans that they didn't like, and they continued to operate for years. Eventually, they only allowed veterans to join their ranks due to their distrust of politicians, which, fine. The hangings, not so much, but the distrust of politicians, good.
I get that,
somehow continue until they formed the Terran Federation. So this vigilante group with big ideas eventually...
It's essentially a coup, right? Like, it's essentially like a rogue faction that just steps in and is like, well, like, we get a government, and then if we're, like, angry enough, people aren't going to want to vote against the person that we put in power because they're going to get their fucking house carpet bombed by us because we're this huge vigilante group.
This is actually my following sentence. It was never meant to be a coup d'etat. They compared themselves to the Russian Revolution, where one system was simply replaced with another.
The Bolsheviks. We've talked about that.
We have.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's another interesting point from Heinlein's fiction. Racism at this point, now that we have the Terran Federation, racism is basically gone from a systemic standpoint. So it's not that there are no racists. It's just the fact that there are no racist systems.
Yeah, like, yeah.
It is, again...
There's no presupposition of guilt for black people or...
Exactly.
Or
it is
presupposition of
equality.
Good... Yeah, presupposition of good maths for Asian people.
No. Exactly.
You want to name a few more of those, or what?
Yeah.
Heinlein specifically writes about an Asian guy who's bad at math. He's very progressive for the 50s.
Yeah. A predisposition that, to my knowledge, does not curries happen. For Indian people.
Yeah, he just hates curry. It's the worst. The Federation is a multicultural society with an elected global leader.
Yeah, so it's okay. Still elected in big quotes, right?
It's still it is still a democracy, asterisk, because elections are the interesting part of Federation life. Every person is born a civilian, which is guaranteed the vast majority of what we would consider basic human rights in our country, at least. When a civilian turns 18, they have the choice to enroll in a minimum 2-year contract of federal service, which is the military. And after completing the service, a civilian becomes a citizen and they gain the right to vote.
Okay.
Right.
This is now, good when you have world-consuming bugs at your doorstep, though, I will
they
say.
They didn't yet, is like, the look, thing. It was... Just the military took over the planet and was just like, okay. Yeah, everybody's super equal, but I mean, if you want to say in what happens, you better be ready to kill somebody.
Yeah, you better kill somebody who's not being equal enough, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. This would be why some people, I think, rightly criticize the Terran Federation for being a fascist government. Now, whether you want to think enforced equality is utopian or dystopian is up to you, which is why I find it an interesting subject to bandy about, especially in the context of Starship Troopers. But it's
I think either extreme is dystopian, right? Like, if you can't talk in absolutes. Like,
I would agree.
That breaks the system. Like,
yeah, no, look, I would absolutely agree with you. That's why I said earlier, like, I think this is totally a dystopian fascist government, but... It's interesting to think about at the very least, right?
How does giving all citizens equal support make sense when not everyone is born in equal circumstances? Like, that just, it just makes no sense to me. Like, it just doesn't square for a second.
No, of course not. And that's why it's a philosophical work of science fiction written by someone who has a particular set of beliefs, which is interesting. I don't want to fucking live in this society. Are you kidding me?
I think there's value in the writing. Like, Ray Bradbury, Fahrenheit 451, he wrote about a dystopian future. Yeah. And, like, it's a fully dystopian setting or whatever. He was just critical of it in the end. Like, the main character gets out of the city and, like, goes to live in the wilderness where they can have their books and he can have the Gospel of John.
What's his last name? Guy something?
Guy Montag. Guy Fieri. The city itself in Fahrenheit 451 is Flavortown.
Yeah, exactly. And they put so much spice that it burns books.
Yeah, finally he finds a copy of The Joy of Cooking, and which is really the cookbook for your everyman.
Yeah. Wow. This, you don't have to put butter and mayonnaise in everything.
That's amazing. Especially not your hair.
Yeah. I heard mayonnaise is good for your hair, actually.
I heard that meme. I seriously doubt it.
My mom used to do it. I don't know if it was good or not, but she used to do it.
Your mom put mayonnaise in her. That's good for
her. Yeah, in the shower. Like, she would put it in and then just leave it in and then wash it out.
Are you kidding?
No, I'm absolutely serious.
He doesn't seem like he's kidding.
That's fucked up.
I was a kid, I was like, whatever you gotta do, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know. You say it's fucked up, Pete, but, like, what the fuck's in shampoo?
I don't know.
I don't know either, dude. So
less mayonnaise, but some other shit.
Mine has head and shoulders in it. But.
Yeah. both the head and the shoulders.
Yeah,
at least
head,
one
shoulders,
head and multiple
head and
shoulders.
Head and shoulders and mayonnaise is a different shampoo. That's the one I don't buy. I buy head and shoulders and ranch, like a civilized person.
Yeah.
I only remember her doing it once. It might have been like an experiment type thing, but
I'm picturing the Mr.
Burns at the supermarket with a bottle of ketchup and a bottle of catsup, and one is a bottle of Head and Shoulders, and the other is a bottle of Head and Shoulders and mayonnaise.
Oh my god.
Ketchup. Catsup. Catsup.
So, back to the Federation. What I don't know about their showering habits. It might
definitely
be
mayonnaise.
Zesty Italian in the shower. Who knows?
Low boys canon. The fascist federation. A fascist world order. Is mayonnaise loving?
Hell yeah!
They don't want any flavor.
Person, I was already on board with this.
They don't want any flavor in their meals. Everyone can get on board with mayonnaise. Are you kidding? Sriracha, way too spicy for some folk. Okay, no, thank you. Garam masala, what even is that?
It's like eggs and oil whipped together. That's what mayonnaise is, right?
Pretty much.
Yeah. So, yeah. And also conservative ideals. You got to toss that in there. It's all there.
The most mayonnaise of ideals, I will say.
Yeah. So when a civilian in the Federation turns 18, they have the choice to enroll in a minimum 2-year contract of federal service. Like I said, that's the military. And after completing their military service for 2 years, they can vote. Voting is the only thing that is kept from civilians, but it does not hinder them in other aspects of their life. Johnny Rico's family is immensely wealthy in the movie and in the book. Neither one of his parents are citizens. They're both civilians.
Civilian and citizen are separate.
Citizen is someone who can vote. Civilian is someone who is of age that never did their military service.
Never did their military service.
But the Federation does not keep you from anything else. So if you're a Filipino family who has a good idea and or can abuse your employees, bing, bang, boom, you're rich as shit.
They put mayonnaise into the head and
you
shoulders.
And you just can't vote.
They got rich. Yeah. Yeah.
They got rich on their mayonnaise farm. Farming all that mayonnaise.
I think it's more like cranberries, where the mayonnaise floats to the surface and you just wade into it.
Exactly. You skim it off the top. Yeah.
you skim the mayonnaise off of your mayonnaise marsh.
I gotta go play Stardew Valley again. You guys got me into it. Yeah.
You got your mayonnaise marsh?
There's mayonnaise machines and cranberries in that game.
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh, they come from the same season, basically.
Both of them are very lucrative. So.
Yeah. So the film overly simplifies the political system just by saying service guarantees citizenship, which is true, but that's the only part that the movie really gets into. The Federation appears to hold both service and voting of equal importance because they will accept anyone regardless of ability. A quote from a doctor in the novel, like a doctor who does the physicals, that states, "If you came in here in a wheelchair and blind in both eyes and were silly enough to insist on enrolling, we would find you something silly to match, counting the fuzz on a caterpillar by touch, maybe."
So all I got to do is pretend to be blind and in a wheelchair.
And you can count.
And they'll just make me pet caterpillars all day.
Exactly.
And which I'm very down for.
After 2 years, the person who counted caterpillar fuzz would vote, and an able-bodied person who didn't join up would not be able to.
What's your stance on hairy caterpillars?
Yeah.
Again, I'm interested in them, but not sexually attracted.
Okay.
I don't know what kind of opinions
someone who could vote after petting caterpillars for 2 years would still hold. It's like, this caterpillar's got some sex pest problems, but I don't know. He knows caterpillars better than I do, and I like that.
Yeah. I vote for the caterpillar man. Yeah. Sure, he's ugly now, but give him some time to pupate.
Yeah, he's kind of fascist now, but maybe he'll pupate and come out as a progressive.
Yeah.
He's very against caterpillar trebuchets.
Yeah.
Trebuchets
are for mice, goddammit.
And what was
mice and pedophiles.
Pedophiles.
Yeah.
Both of them sneak around in the middle of the night, you know.
Exactly.
And eat dry toast off the floor.
Mm-hmm.
Turn the lights on, the pedophiles just like scatter behind the fridge. You're like, God damn it.
We're infested. Get my revolver. I gotta put it in this trap.
The pedophile trap. So after enlisting, and just to kind of talk more about the lack of rigidity to this, after enlisting, there is what's known as the cool-off period, where 48 hours where a volunteer for the military can just pack up their shit and get the fuck out of Dodge. The
like,
only penalty...
off base?
Just leave the military. You've got 48 hours after joining up to...
Oh, you can change your mind.
To change your mind, exactly.
Okay, I gotcha.
If you unpacked,
they probably make the first 2 days so nice.
Yeah.
Well, get need anything? You want some food?
Yeah.
Oh, what?
You need some mayonnaise?
You thought we were going to do push-ups here? Nah, man. That's just in movies. We don't do that here. Yeah. Come on. Come on.
Day three.
Let's play some Xbox, huh? Yeah?
Yeah.
I got the new FIFA. No. Not the one that came out this year. The one that's coming out next year. Okay? Yeah. You want to sit down and play with me? Let's go,
that's
buddy.
The kind of
come on.
You can expect in the Federation, bro. We're one FIFA ahead.
It's
like kind of having the almanac.
Pretty much the same. It's pretty much the same as the last FIFA, though. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it.
You could just change the cover and somebody would fucking believe you.
Yeah. They made some guesses about how the players will be next year, but they don't
know. Why'd you remove that player? It's like, oh, we just assume he would die. I don't know. Yeah. The only penalty for bailing after during your 48-hour grace period is you are banished from joining the military in the future, meaning you will never be able to vote.
Okay.
If you bow out.
Okay. That's like a big consideration.
Yeah.
Like joining the military should be, I guess.
Yeah. Of course, in this one, it's the only way to vote in the global elections because there's one government. So it's even heavier in this instance. The banishment does not extend to your kids. In the same way, not enlisting doesn't affect your kids because, as we established with Johnny Rico,
Johnny does.
His parents never enlisted, but he did.
Yeah.
So they'll take anybody.
I don't want to be a wheelchair caterpillar farmer.
Guy. Boom.
Yeah. I don't want to be a mayonnaise farmer, Pa. I'm going to join the military. No son of mine's going to join the military. Now take this mayonnaise.
My grandpappy farmed mayo, his grandpappy, and his grandpappy before him.
What are you going to do? Eat your turkey sandwiches dry?
I don't want to fucking bring this up again. Yeah, in Aberdeen, they had an argument about club sandwiches. And that's why
How big is a turkey egg?
Probably a little bit bigger than smaller than an ostrich.
Have you ever seen one?
No.
No.
I was just thinking about making some turkey mayonnaise.
Oh, turkey egg mayonnaise? What about ostrich egg mayonnaise? I'm sure it's a thing.
It's probably chunky.
One ostrich per jar?
Why do you think it's chunky?
You make it out of the whites.
Because everything's bigger in an ostrich.
That is true.
Yeah, so there'd be more chunks.
There's no lumps in an egg white.
Well, maybe once you get to ostrich size... You never know.
Do you think ostriches have the biggest dicks in the bird kingdom?
Yeah, they must, bird.
Right? They're the biggest bird. Established ducks have those rocket
crazy
penises.
Spiral dicks. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it would depend on what an ostrich vagina is like.
What if it's like fish and they just drop the egg and then the male just squirts on it into the nest and then goes elsewhere?
It's probably, yeah, maybe. I hope to God it's not like that.
Gobble gobble.
Yeah,
gobble gobble, so many, says the ostrich.
There's so many images of male ostriches just jerking off on nests on the internet. If you just go look for them, you'll find them.
But that's why they bury their head in the sand, is because they're ashamed. That's why they've got their head buried in the sand and they're just jerking off with their one foot and standing up on the other.
That's flamingos. Yeah. They just don't want to step in it, so they're always keeping one leg up.
Yeah.
Not like those fucking vultures who throw up on their feet.
That's everybody's got their thing. Don't yuck someone else's yum.
That's true. Good point. No kink-shaming vultures.
No kink-shaming vultures here.
Yeah. Nope. Or turkey mayonnaise. You guys got to love that, too.
Well, when you make it, I'll try it.
And you get a turkey.
I'm sure you can find some hipster food store in Montreal that sells fucking turkey mayonnaise.
Ugh. All right. I mean, not currently, but when everything reopens, I'm going to go pick me up some turkey mayonnaise. So in the military, there are 31 regulations, which I will not list because it's way too many.
That's 31. Yeah, that's
and as your rank increases all the way up to like throughout the Federation ranks, punishments actually get more severe. So a high-ranking person committing the same crime as a low-ranking person would be executed. For an example, where a low-ranking person would be subjected to administrative punishment, which is flogging.
Let's not say death or flogging, but like that kind of punishment scaling makes sense to me. Like in Sweden, I think it is, they do like scaled, financially scaled tickets. So somebody on the board of executives for Nokia got a speeding ticket for like $235,000, but it's because they make millions of dollars a year. So it's like, if you give somebody who makes millions of dollars a year a $800 speeding ticket, they do not fucking care for a second. Like, it does
that's
not register
fucking
in their bank account. Yeah. So like that's, I feel like that's the kind of the same concept that's happening here in this, where it's like, these are people who should be more responsible, who have more responsibility. So, like, for them to betray that position should mean more.
I put it in here, which it's just the you should have known better way of running things.
Yeah, exactly.
And I actually, honestly, that percentage ticket system in Sweden is fucking great. That's a great
idea. It's the only way it should work. Like, it's criminal that we don't do it in Canada, but again, oligarchs and billionaires control our government, so yeah, what can you do?
Yeah, fucking <worse. laughs> Maybe service should be the only thing to guarantee citizenship, honestly.
Yeah. What am I going to do? Vote for Party A or Party B? Man, well.
Yeah. Exactly. Or throw your vote away on Party C like I did.
Yeah, exactly. I threw my vote away on Party D. Thank you very much.
Oh, Lord. The Greens?
I voted Greens.
Ah! She's my favorite leader, but she's the worst choice.
I want that vote.
So Johnny Rico is a member of the Mobile Infantry in the novel and in the film. However, the book is so much cooler. In the film, the army is pretty basic-looking soldiers with slightly oversized-looking guns and contemporary-looking body armor. They look basically like the American military, but they're dark gray and blue, once again, to evoke the traditional-looking Nazi uniform.
Okay.
It's the gray, it's the blue, it's the Hugo Boss, basically.
Yeah, literally.
Yeah, well, that's not a saying. It's not. It's the gray. It's the blue. It's the Hugo Boss. It's not like cover girl logo.
maybe she's born with it. Maybe she's a Nazi.
Yeah. You know?
That famous ad slogan.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm digging Maybelline, but we should be digging Coco Chanel because Coco Chanel was a spy for the Nazis in World War II.
God damn it! What, dude? What? So chic, yeah. All of them. Jeez. Yeah.
They all have handbags.
Yeah.
Hitler never pictured without his clutch.
Yeah. All right. Strapless. Brand side out, boys.
But the Sieg Heil was them just holding up their new purses to show off to their friends. Originally, that's where it came from.
Can't be the art.
No.
I mean, I am all for Hitler Sieg Heiling a Coco Chanel purse.
That's okay.
Okay.
But I mean, I'm not in charge, so
I mean, this is a democratic podcast.
You're saying this is not a fascist podcast?
It's not a fascist podcast. Okay, I mean, from the perspective of the listeners who might not like that idea, maybe. It's just three people making all the decisions, but...
Yeah. What's good enough for us is good enough for them.
Yeah, goddamn.
Hey, we didn't even choose the topic of today's episode, so we are a little democratic.
It's a trickle-down cover art. we'll do the cover rights, and they'll just get little bits of it.
Emailing guarantees citizenship, so Peter in the Netherlands gets exactly what he wants because he participates. You all get the podcast, but you don't get to choose. So in the novel, soldiers are dropped from orbit in single man pods that are equipped with what are called powered armor suits.
Okay.
This would go on to influence countless films, books, and video games.
Halo.
Master Chief and the ODSTs directly.
Yeah. Right? One man in a power suit dropping down from space.
Yeah.
SpongeBob SquarePants Bikini Bottom 2.
Apparently.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, if you think of the air as space. Yeah.
Yes.
Air would be space, so it'd be like... above, like the surface above the water, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And then space for SpongeBob is double space.
Okay. Yeah, that's what they call it.
Yeah, the famous SpongeBob episode, Double Space, where he drops from orbit to fight alien bugs.
Yeah, to fight
for a fascist government, for Mr. Krabs. Actually,
it's the final frontier.
The actor who plays Mr. Krabs is in Starship Troopers.
Oh, is he?
Clancy
that's so
Brown
fun.
Is in Starship
I'm glad
Troopers.
We got there.
Yeah. Yeah,
Jamie secretly knew that. He was just trying to bring it there.
Jamie's always been the CIA operative of this fucking podcast, planting stupid fucking ideas in our heads. Like, slowly triggering us over time to get to a certain joke.
Start talking about politics. I got to start talking about Mayo and SpongeBob, you know?
Got to diffuse the situation.
Yeah.
Got to be not too controversial. So the suit on the inside features, and this is like, the first time some of this shit had ever been talked about because it was 1959. The suit features a holographic HUD, a compass that can like give you little visual blips of where your allies and enemies are. So it's basically got IFF on the inside as well. It's got jump jets that allow the users to clear an entire skyscraper. In the book, Rico describes something called a Y-rack, which judging by some of the old-timey art and from what I've seen, as well as what has been adapted to in things like Battletech, it looks like it is a defensive armament mounted on the back of the suit in a Y shape that just kind of independently fires rockets to keep you safe.
Shoulder-mounted rocket launchers.
Yeah, but you don't have to control them, and they point off to the sides because you don't have to aim them.
Okay.
So, like, the elemental power armor in Battletech is Y-shaped, at least for some clans. Okay. So that's definitely inspiration taken from there. A Marine is equipped with multiple pieces of defensive ordnance, a rocket launcher. You can also just, like, customize what's going on your suit. They all have a rifle and multiple grenades as well that all do different things. Like I said earlier, the novel opens in medias res, where Rico is already inside his drop pod, waiting to be dropped from orbit onto an alien planet. He kind of talks about being nervous, but how the Marines go through hypnotherapy to prevent panic and also prevent PTSD. So they get hypnotized by, like, psychics, which apparently exist now.
Bottle that shit way deep down, my guy.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Well, they just sit in a room with a stern-looking father figure who's just said, never talk about your feelings, son.
Yeah, exactly.
For hours. Like, that's their 2 years of training, is they just sit in a room and get told never to have feelings ever again.
You get a wooden truck to play with on the floor, and there's, like, a carpet and, like, a roaring fire, and then there's a father in a leather-bound chair wearing, like, a sweater vest, and he has a mustache, and he just says, you'll never be good enough.
You get your standard issue blue with cloud print footsie pajamas, and
yeah, that's what they all drop in. That's the power armor, right?
The footsie pajamas. See, that might be the art, Jamie. That might be better.
There you go. Better than drawing Hitler with a fucking handbag, man.
Well, you know what?
Hitler in a handbag is a great
episode album.
Title. Yeah, it is.
At the very least, I mean.
So yeah, he's contemplating, basically thinking about what it's like to drop from orbit in his suit. And actually, the original enemies that he's going up to fight are an alien race known as Skinnies.
Okay.
But that's a slang term for them. The actual name is not known because they never actually learned to speak English. They're just referred to as Skinnies because they are very standard built gray alien sort of things. Very slim, very tall, but they have kind of, in a lot of the old art, weird kind of conical heads with buck teeth and tusks.
Okay.
They don't have an upper lip either. It's just, like, nose straight into gum, sort of fucked up territory.
Sounds uncomfortable.
Real Joaquin Phoenix shit going on up there.
Okay.
Yeah, all bad news.
Mentioned that last episode, didn't we?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah.
Now, the early mission that they have here is more of a shock and awe thing. They are instructed specifically not to kill anybody in the first mission, where Rico at one point blows up a wall where he finds a bunch of Skinnies congregating. He doesn't know if it's like a church or a building is what he talks about. Like, he doesn't know what's going on. And he throws a timed grenade. The grenade has a speaker on it that communicates in the Skinny language and announces to them, I am a 30-second bomb. 29. 28. 27, which, just so that they could get away and he could still blow up the building, it's like a psychological warfare bomb.
Yeah.
Which for me always sounded like it's something out of, like, Portal. It, like, he, like, throws in the bomb that deploys smooth jazz sort of shit.
Yeah. Definitely something Gladys would use on the pro tag.
Yeah, exactly.
Now you're thinking with fascism.
So other than the power armored space marines, the army also fields something called the K-9 unit, or the Neo Dog, which is frankly, for my taste, worse than fascism, because they are a recon symbiote derived from something called dog stock, which I don't know if this is just like a dog shaped gelatin wad in a laboratory that they can grow, like, a dog animal out of?
No, I think if you just own livestock, like, you'd call it, like, that's your stock, right? So I think it's just, like, a stock of dogs. Like,
when I'm cooking, I've used, like, chicken stock or beef stock.
See, that's what Peter was going for. I don't think it's that, though, guys. I think it's more like livestock.
You don't think it's like a dog bouillon cube?
Or sheeps. Yeah. I mean, maybe it is, but I think it's more likely that they just bred dogs to
do a certain thing. We talked about a few things that are a little bit fucked up until this point, so I don't know.
Why not dog soup?
The Neo Dogs can speak. and oh, have the intelligence of an average 8 to 12 year old child.
Smarter than me.
Same.
Yep. Smarter than all three of us combined, frankly.
Because we only have the intelligence of a 5 year old, and 5 times 3, it's less than 8. So,
thank God we got that pedophile trebuchet, right?
Yeah, it keeps us safe.
Yeah.
Thanks to the patrons for paying for our pedophile trebuchet. Psychics are also in the novel, like I said, although Rico never really confirms it. There's a clairvoyant branch of the military, but their function is only to find alien tunnels, so that he theorizes they might just have very good hearing.
Which, I mean, is kind of in line with, like, real quote-unquote psychics today, or just,
yeah.
Like, yeah, they're good at picking up on stuff, but they're not psychic, obviously.
Yeah, obviously.
I'm thinking of a number between 1 and 10. Think of one.
22.
22. No, don't say it out loud.
Oh, frick. Fuck.
Okay, well, never mind.
Don't give any hints, guys. I'm psychic. I don't need that. Well, like, what was the answer then?
In your head, and I was going to say it. Most of the time, it's 7. I saw it in a pick artist video. This guy uses this on women, and he'll be like, think of a number between 1 and 10. And then, like, 7. And most of the time, statistically, it's usually 7 for whatever reason. And, yeah. He tricks people into thinking that he's impressive that way.
I bet you it's most of the time only 7 in our very specific subsect of Western culture.
Yeah.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I bet you go to a Romanian and it's maybe something else, whatever the lucky number is in Romanian.
That's the same guy who goes, you're really beautiful, but beauty's common. What's your best opinion?
I watch it. Fucking fascinate me, honestly.
Oh, he's horrible. I watch it for just, like, laughing.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Well, I mean, it's like reading about a fascist government where you're just like, wow, how strange. I kind of find it mesmerizing.
Yeah. Watching Minecraft convention cringe compilations.
Yes, exactly.
You can't look away.
Finally, other than the psychics and the, I think, dog clones made of gelatin, there are the engineers, who are not the most skilled fighters, but they are more standard infantry, as they do not use mechanized suits. Other than this, the Navy is staffed and run mostly by women. Pilots like Carmen, who we talked about earlier, and all of the high-ranking officers and the vast majority of this branch are ladies. Navy spaceships are armed with planet-destroying Nova bombs, a bunch of orbital artillery, and their primary function is to serve as dropships for the orbital troopers.
Can I just say I'm super happy to hear that after Jurassic Park, they went on to bigger and better things and took over the Navy?
Yeah, I'm Earth. Glad the dinosaurs finally got their shit together and took over the Space Navy. Carmen was a Velociraptor.
Good.
Who to fight, though? So we mentioned the Skinnies. Which are the first antagonists, but really, since it opens during an attack, the humans are the aggressors in the novel. The primary antagonists are the Arachnids, which are a hive-minded race of spacefaring arthropodic. They're not technically arthropods. They're bug-like, like monsters from the planet Klendathu, that humanity encountered while out and about in space. So anything we've talked about prior to this, where humanity was kind of just fucking around in outer space and ran into some aliens, tried a little diplomacy, but we don't speak hive mind bug monster, and then just immediately went to an infinite and unending war.
Good.
Thanks, Heinlein, for that.
Honestly, sounds pretty realistic.
It absolutely does. Now, like I said, they did try diplomacy, so the Federation, despite having its issues, is not openly hostile towards alien life. The Federation would quarantine a planet that had already been conquered by the Arachnids to avoid conflict. Of course, that didn't work. After multiple attacks on human colonies and a massacre on a settlement on an alien planet called Port Joe Smith, the Federation declared war on the Arachnids.
Totally. Very multicultural, this new Terran Federation. It's super inclusive of all races and cultures.
It is, because Port Joe Smith was a space colony of extreme space Mormons. And the Arachnids tunneled underneath it and then erupted within the colony and slaughtered everybody in the colony.
Okay. Night is wormed.
Night is wormed. Always scout your base.
The film depicts both the human and arachnid armies basically as cannon fodder, where every battle is just a war of attrition, where obviously if you have a powered armored infantry against a hive mind, that's not the way it worked in the book. But again, the film takes a completely different approach to warfare. The Skinnies originally worked with the arachnids, but during the Bug Wars, they switched sides and began to feed intel to the Federation. I don't know how, maybe through the psychics, maybe through some other means, whatever. This was due to the arachnids being untrustworthy traitors, and during the Bug Wars, they attacked multiple Skinny colonies during the war.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if, like, the Skinnies, like, we super oppress them or whatever, but maybe the Skinnies kind of realize, well, the arachnids might just entirely wipe us out. So,
yeah,
you know?
You cannot reason with the arachnids because they are a hive mind controlled by a hierarchy of brain bugs and god bugs, which use psychic abilities to command drones remotely. So you can't really parlay with the army. Cause
it's just like human religion, right?
Yeah. Oh, Jesus. Most controversial thing yet.
More than Hitler in a handbag.
Yeah. So after multiple intrusions to arachnid territory, the bugs decided enough was enough, and they launched a meteor at Earth, destroying Buenos Aires, Argentina. In the film, Rico lives there, and both his parents are killed. However, in the novel, only his mom is killed there because she is on vacation. This causes Rico's dad to join the military and serve under his son. And then all of these events combined, all of this eventually lead to the Bug War and the second Bug War depicted in the novel and in the films.
So now we're are you wrapping up here?
That's the end of it. That is everything leading up to the content you can currently consume.
It really seems like towards the end, because like I said with Fahrenheit 451, like he sets up this very fascist government, and then like towards the end of the story you realize like they're bad, and he does things to combat fascism, and now you really see where Heinlein is like leaning into the fascism, right? Like,
yeah,
oh, like his father who never signed up for the military was obviously wrong, and his wife died as a result of it. So now in the end of the, or towards the middle of the book, he joins up in the military and he does the right thing to fight the bugs that are coming into our home to take our things, our Joseph Smith colonies. Come on.
Regardless of any of the, regardless of like all the like fancy global equality and shit that he has, kind of written into the lore, Might Makes Right is definitely like the subtitle of Starship Troopers, which is why, again, I find the whole thing fascinating, but I would never want to live in a Heinlein society of Starship Troopers.
I mean, also the Skinnies, right? It's like, oh yeah, we oppressed them, but once they realized we were the lesser of two evils, they came to our side, you know? Because like even they realized, those idiots who can't speak our language, they learned the error of their ways and came to help us. Like, okay, buddy.
That's why he's controversial, but also very interesting. And when somebody suggested Starship Troopers, I was like, fuck me, I never thought of that. But I knew it would be an interesting little rabbit hole to dive into.
Thank you, Peter. Dutch Peter.
Yeah, fuck you, Peter.
Dutch Peter sounds like a sex move, honestly, if I'm going to be honest. I gave her the Dutch Peter last night.
I'm fairly certain Dutch Peter gives a couple of people the Dutch Peter every once in a while. At least
every once in a while, I give them the good old Dutch Peter.
Sorry if you hear this.
I feel like that could be the subtitle for our podcast.
I'm sorry if you hear this.
Yeah, based on like what we're talking about in terms of art and episode title, I wonder how many people have looked up the lore for something, clicked on our website, and then said, "No, not for me."
No, like, thank you.
Just saw a Castlevania dude jerking himself off with a thing around his neck. And
I'm interested in learning more about Robert Heinlein. I bet this podcast called "Raking the Mayonnaise Swamp" has a lot of information I need.
Yeah, welcome to the Robert Heinlein podcast, Raking the Mayonnaise Swamp.
Anyway, I've been your host, non-Dutch Peter O'Donohue. You can find me at Pete O'Donohue on Twitter or at Loreboys Podcast on Instagram. I do the art, theloreboys.com, and I've been joined here with, I suppose, our most Aryan-looking fellow.
I'm Ethan, not Dutch, but kind of wish I were. Thanks for listening. Thanks for all your support, everyone. You guys are awesome. Everybody on Patreon, you're super incredible. Big shout out to you guys. Big shout out to everybody who's not on Patreon and still comes to the Discord, talks to us. There's links on the website, loreboys.com. Reach out to us, contact@loreboys.com, or tweet at us. I'm at Ethan the Dead Man on Twitter. We're at loreboys on Twitter.
Yep. I'm James Miller, and I've been your third host. You can find me at twitch.tv/theloreboys from time to time, but mostly just in the Discord. So check the about section on the website, go to loreboys.com and get into that Discord, because we've got a lot of cool people there, a lot of like-minded folk who like lore and just hanging out. So come join us.
There's a section on our website now called Make Your Merch, where we release transparent images that you can print onto things. Post-pandemic, we'll probably start selling stuff, but I would like to leave the free page up otherwise. If you have suggestions of something you want as a transparent image, please email us at loreboyspodcast@gmail.com. Right now, we just have the logo. We're going to put up the Check on Texas thing in the next couple of days because I've been working on it, but strangely got busy at home. But yeah, anything you want, let us know. Put that on a piece of corn, whatever the fuck you want. Just, keep us posted.
Crunch at us.
Yeah.
Like I said, everybody supports us on Patreon. Thank you so much. Anybody who wants to do so, patreon.com/theloreboys. And anybody who doesn't trust those fat cats at Patreon, we always have Lore Boys Prime available for you. So
the
this
Patreon
week,
hegemony, keep away.
Yeah, come to the Lore Boys hegemony instead. So of course, Lore Boys Prime, as it always does, it always costs $67 per month. So that's never changed. We've always hardlined $67. Never will change, probably. And you get a ton of cool things in return. In the past, we've given you guys bathtub visits. We have given you guys, trips to Double Space. All sorts of super cool things. And
jars
this week,
skin flakes at some point, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, for sure. Several jars of skin flakes, probably, to each Lore Boys primer. But this week, we're offering you guys something really special, a chance to join the Lore Boys militia. That's right, suit up. We're causing wanton destruction in a neighborhood near you sometime soon. So make sure to send that $67, and you guys will be right in there with us installing new governments in your local country sometime soon. If you guys ever wanted to vote on the art for Lore Boys, yeah,
too fucking bad.
Well, no, now's your chance, because you join the militia for $67 a month, and all of a sudden you get a vote. You know, that's how it counts. You do have to wait 2 years for your vote to actually count. So
Everybody gets a trebuchet and their very own mayonnaise shampoo.
Yeah, so. <That's
it. laughs> keep the pedos out.
Yeah, exactly. So that's our offer for you guys. Thanks so much for listening, and I guess as always, that constitutes
a Lore Boys
salute.
Trebucheting out.
Salute.
My name is Peter, and this is really more of a butthole-themed roundtable.
My name's Ethan, and some people call me the man who was born with no butthole.
My name's James. I was watching live PD today, and a guy put half an ounce of cocaine in his butt and denied that it was his.
Well, there's no way to prove that it was his.
It was his butt!
Yeah, that could have been anyone's. That's
could
why
have been anybody. It could have been anybody's cocaine. Sir, before you got on this airplane, did you pack your own butt today? No. You know, really, I don't think I did.
I packed it, but I did leave it unattended for a while.
Yeah, I left my butt unattended when I fell asleep face down in the airport, so anybody could have put cocaine in my butt.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.